I would have kept playing. I would have just sent him back out there in the rain. As long as there's no lightning, just let him play.
Well, you can't do that.
I would have if I was the umpires.
Oh, yeah. You got to be the umpires in order to make that decision.
Yeah. But
I guess they didn't want to be there until 2 in the morning.
Yeah, jerks.
Which makes some sense. How weird is baseball, though, that a game's not over, but it's over?
Yeah,
you
even
play full time, and it's over.
They play extra time in soccer, but in baseball, they don't even play full time.
It's the only sport where you don't really have to finish.
Yeah, it's amazing. You heard from Dan McLaughlin on FS Midwest. You heard from Brewers Television. You heard from the Cardinals skipper, Mike Shilton. You heard from Adam Wainwright, who did scuffle in that first inning, allowing the grand slam to Mike Moustakas. 5 hits in the first inning alone against Waino, who's admitted he just didn't have his stuff. That happens. Even the best pitchers in baseball in a normal good year are going to have a game a month where they blow up. And Adam blew up last night, and he just was not good. Now, the story of the day, obviously, is Matt Carpenter. And we said, as we said at the top of yesterday's show, BT was here and BT is on assignment. He's not with us today. He's Brad Thompson on assignment.
Yeah, it sounds official.
Yeah,
but
it does.
I believe he's got pre and post tonight.
Oh, for the Cardinals?
I think so.
FS Midwest. Okay. Yeah. So that's his assignment today.
Oh, okay.
But we all agreed that if we were in charge, Matt Carpenter would sit. And last night, Matt Carpenter did start. And in a key situation, bases loaded, Alex Claudio comes in and strikes him out. Mike Shildt, did you consider pinch hitting for him?
It's always a thought. I mean, we're also in, you know, I mean, Carp's never been a splitty guy. I mean, Claudio's a tough look, you know, but he's capable of taking a good at bat against him for sure. Yeah, there's always a thought to it. You know, we're in our bench a little early, so now you're looking at running out of guys if you do that in the sixth. So, you know, there was a thought to it, but really, like I said, Carp's a you know, and look, we get it. It's about production in the moment. But that's also an opportunity for him to, you know, grab a big hit, put the ball in play. He's a fly ball guy, Carp. So we're looking at, you know, run the board. If he puts it in play, the infield's back. He didn't.
Number one, if you're worried about a short bench, that's a you problem. It's not a we problem or an us problem. That is a you problem. And yeah, Carpenter's splits have been equally horrific. So
he's actually been a little bit better against left-handers this year.
It's not saying an awful lot.
It is not saying anything at all, quite honestly. But it is a small sample size. All right, here's the thing. You can't just put it on him. He's going to receive a huge part of the attention because he has not been good. He's been really quite lousy this year, and I'm sorry to say it, but that's where he's been. His 2019 season with a 684 OPS is so far from good enough that I think that we've reached that conclusion a long time ago, and I know they've been waiting on him. But I also understand it's not just him. A lot of other guys in the lineup failed last night, but wherever you can improve, and this is what I've been talking about for a long time, wherever you can find an improvement or believe you have an improvement, that's what you need to do because a run or two might matter. If he comes up in that situation, whoever's hitting and gets a hit, that game is tied, and it's a suspended game, and maybe we're finishing that thing at another time instead of just being outright handed a loss. And I think every single one of these games, not I think, I know, every one of these games for the rest of the year is important. Look at the division. In one night, it flipped. We went from being in first place to now you're back in second. And that could change again tonight. But the point is, this is how close it is. You cannot afford to throw games away or at bats.
And this is a guy, we have to give him all due respect, because there have been less than 20,000 people that have played Major League Baseball, fewer still that have been multiple top 10 MVP guys. But right now, last 7 days, 2-for-16, 125 batting average and a 613 OPS. That's the last 7 days. Last 14 days, he is 5-for-32, a 156 batting average and a 595 OPS.
That's really bad. That's really, really bad.
Yeah, 282 on base, 313 slug. Last 28 days, he has 9 hits in 46 at-bats, a 196 average, and a 626 OPS. So he has done nothing to allow us to believe that he's going to – nothing recently in the last week, 2 weeks, month, to make us believe that he's going to be successful. And as you mentioned, Raj, he has been better against left-handed hitting this year than against right-handing. And we also mentioned that that's not saying much. Against right-handed pitching or left-handed pitching this year, a 234 batting average and a 729 OPS with two homers and seven runs batted in 80 plate appearances.
No, that's not good. And here's the issue the Cardinals are in, because the offense is not stacked from top to bottom this year. And I think if you would have looked at the offense before the season started and thought that Carpenter would be his old self and Paul Goldschmidt the same thing, it's a decent lineup. It's not a great lineup, certainly not one of the best in the National League, but it's a good enough lineup to score a decent amount of runs for you this year. But if Carpenter is as bad as he has been, that is a massive, massive hole, because he should be one of the top three, I will call it run producing, even though he's in the leadoff spot. That's a guy who hits. His profile is a run producer. You know, a typical run producer. Somebody who's Matt Carpenter's skill set normally is batting third in a traditional lineup. But he leads off for this team. At any rate, though, he, Paul Goldschmidt, Marcell Ozuna are supposed to be a huge chunk of this offense, the biggest chunk together, those three guys. But with the exception of Ozuna, it hasn't really happened. And I think you could put some of the attention on Goldschmidt here, too.
Yeah, he should send Marp a cookie bouquet.
Yeah.
Thanks for protecting me, buddy.
Yeah, I mean, and he went 0-for-4 last night. Yeah, he stranded three runners, and he did not look good. But there has been at least glimpses from him. You know, he's been an above-average hitter. In a down season for him, he's an above-average National League hitter. Carpenter's not even close to that right now. He's just so ineffective. He's not really doing anything positive, and he's not even showing signs that he's going to get better. So maybe if they just said, you know what, Marp, rest of the year, we're going to play you sporadically. Next year, fresh start, back at him, kid. Hopefully you can make something happen, but it's just not going to happen this year.
And Marp is out of the lineup tonight. You've got Fowler, Wong, Goldschmidt, Ozuna, DeJong, Molina, Edmund at third, Bader back in center, and Michaelis on the mound against Colorado as the Cardinals open a four-game series against the Rockies, who have been struggling. And again, especially after losing the finale, and hey, you take two out of three against Milwaukee and you move on. You take two out of three every series, you move on. But against a team like Colorado that's really struggling, this is the kind of game and the kind of series that you have to win. This isn't a series like last week with Cincinnati on the road where you say, okay, I got away with a split. You take three out of four here.
Right. You have to. That's the situation you've put yourselves in as a team. Knowing the rest of the division is still up for grabs, even with the Cubs not playing particularly well and being in first place, again, that could change. They're playing right now against the Giants. They're up 1-0 in the seventh inning. So the Cardinals, by the time they start play tonight, could find themselves a game back. And my guess is that's going to fluctuate here, but you just cannot afford to give games away. You cannot afford to do the same thing with at-bats. You have to maximize every single night. This race is too close not to.
And I did not see this coming, Colorado being in last place in their division.
I didn't think they were going to be that bad, no.
I thought that they
would really be
a playoff contender this year, and they're pretty bad. They're 58-69. They're only 25-40 away from Coors Field tonight. They're going to pitch Herman Marquez, who's really been their best starting pitcher. They put John Gray on the DL for the rest of the season yesterday. Marquez is 12-5 with a 4.71. And Michaelis, who's been predominantly pretty good at home, he's only 7-13 with a 4.3, but his numbers at home are a lot better. Michaelis will go for the Cardinals.
All right. Need a Miles Michaelis from 2018 start tonight. Can we get that done?
Yeah. Or let's see. Miles Michaelis at home. We can pull off a Miles Michaelis home start, right?
Hey, even Michael, let's get a typical Michaelis start this year. That'll work.
2.43 ERA, just 5-5 with a 2.43.
At Busch Stadium?
At Busch this year. 238 batting average against. And he's allowed seven home runs. He's allowed 14 on the road. There's a guy on the Cardinals that has been victimized by the juiced ball, I would say that it's Miles Michaelis. A lot of his numbers look the same as last year, except for the home runs. And I think a big part of that is the juice ball.
That it probably is at least some of it. And that's happened to a lot of guys.
Yeah.
I think we spent some time talking about Josh Hader. Same thing has happened to him. His strikeout numbers, everything else still up. but he's given up a ton of home runs.
Coming up next in the Fast Lane yesterday, speaking of Justin Verlander, who has also allowed a lot of home runs, a reporter for the Detroit Free Press was denied access to Verlander's post-game presser because Verlander didn't want him there. We're going to talk about everything that's wrong with that and what might be right about it and how teams are limiting media access next on 101 ESPN. Well, that was disappointing for the Houston Astros last night. You get a Justin Verlander start. You're the biggest favorite in the history of baseball since Vegas has been making odds, and you wind up losing the game with Justin Verlander on the mound. And by the way, Vegas did pretty well with that game.
Yeah. Well, what were the two teams from just a couple of weeks ago? Same thing happened.
It was Houston and Baltimore.
Yeah.
And Baltimore
right.
beat Houston.
Okay.
But last night, the Tigers won the game 2-1, and it wasn't because of Houston losing the game that afterwards the Astros, at the behest of Justin Verlander, blocked Detroit Free Press writer Anthony Finesse, the beat writer for the Free Press, according to Gene Diaz, the Astros vice president of communications. Diaz said Verlander was adamant that he would not speak to any credentialed media while Finesse was present. As a matter of fact, the day before, when Finesse was there in a scrum, in a media session with Verlander, he wouldn't answer any questions with this guy around. He wouldn't say why he has a problem with Finesse. Today, Verlander has tweeted that he's tried to get in touch with the Detroit Free Press. The executive editor, the sports editor, and this particular writer of the Free Press all say that they haven't heard from Verlander. As a matter of fact, the response on Twitter from the Free Press editor is, hey, we haven't heard from you. I'd love to talk to you, and provided him his ability. And to this point, it looks like Verlander is saying that he's trying to get in touch with the Free Press, but nobody at the Free Press has heard from him.
How much you want to bet that Verlander called, if he did at all make a phone call? It was like the circulation desk, and he said, hey, this is Justin Verlander. I want to talk to so-and-so. And they're like, yeah, okay. And they hung up on him. That's probably exactly what
probably
happened.
It.
Well, yeah, he tried, but nobody believed who you were.
Now, keeping Finesse out of the clubhouse is against Baseball Writers Association of America rules. In 1908, they were granted access to players, and that access still exists to this day. As other members of the media entered the clubhouse, Finesse was blocked by three Astros security officials. In addition to being against BBWAA rules, this is against the collective bargaining agreement. Mm-hmm. And baseball says they're going to investigate and they're going to talk to the Astros about this. I would like to know, and I'm sure we'll find out at some point, why Verlander has this vendetta.
I would like to know, too, because to use the word unethical, because that's exactly mm-hmm. what he said, that he has, that Finesse has acted unethically. I'm not sure what that is. Nobody seems to have any idea what he's referring to. I know some people don't like whatever Finesse's shtick is. They just, and I don't know because I don't really read him,
me
so
either.
I have no idea. And I've tried to find some instances of things that he might be upset about. And the only thing that really popped up happened during the game last night, and or right after the game, the Detroit Free Press had tweeted, and this was the headline of the story, Justin Verlander once again pitches Detroit Tigers to victory. Which is kind of funny, right? It's funny,
it is,
and he did
yeah.
pitch really well in the game. What an odd game for him. He gave up the two home runs. He did not throw a single pitch with a runner on base all night long, mm-hmm. and he ended up losing the game, which is tough for him. But I don't really know what the underlying problem is here. It just kind of sounds like Verlander's being a big baby.
And you wish that a player of his stature would confront the media member
yeah.
one-on-one and say, hey, I've got a problem with this. And try to solve the problem that way rather than make a spectacle of it, which is clearly what he did.
Well, what's really going on here is he's probably he's unhappy about something. Maybe it was a throwaway line or I don't know, over the course of maybe his time in Detroit, something that's happened after the fact. I don't really know what it is. I do know that Finesse actually went out of his way last year to vote for Verlander for Cy Young and even wrote a piece about why he voted for him. So I don't know if there's I don't know what kind of vendetta there could possibly be. But I think we've seen in cases like this a lot, an athlete will claim that a reporter is unethical or doing something that he shouldn't be doing, but won't give a specific example as to why.
Right.
They just feel like they have been wronged in some way, but they can't be specific about what that possibly is.
Now, obviously, newspapers are having their struggles. Teams, because of social media, because of the ease of producing videos. Teams are taking much of their material, their media material, in-house, and they are they're creating their own narrative rather than allowing the media to in many cases, write what they want or talk about what they want. Access certainly isn't now what it has been in the past. And honestly, teams don't need it because they do have social media and that ability. At some point, I don't know when it's going to be, I would think that access to the players by the mainstream media will be even more limited than it is now, because the team will say, look, all you have to do is deal with us. You don't have, and I would think that this will wind up in the CBA, because baseball will want it this way and the players aren't going to disagree. Oh, less media, that's great.
Yep.
And I would think the entire narrative will be put out by the teams. And what the media will have to do, and because of our hours, and I know Bernie does this, and it's a great way to do it, we'll have to report on a game or talk about a game as a movie reviewer, as somebody who doesn't have access to the actors in a movie, and we just look at the product and then we review it.
Or you happen to find people that you trust that will tell you stuff that's going on inside. And a lot of times when that happens and it comes from the team, it's from an employee that is not happy with what they're looking at or what's going on, and then they will go and tell a reporter they trust, and then that eventually gets out there. Now, I know a lot of people are going to look at this and go, well, screw them. Who needs them? Who needs the press?
Who needs the media? And that is a common theme throughout society.
And, okay, I understand that sentiment. And I understand that, and then let me keep this to sports for now.
Yeah.
But I understand that a lot of times, I know. But journalism is important, and I'm not going to say otherwise. It is really, really important to us, and people someday will probably realize that it is, and they don't understand it right now, but it is very important to our society. But in terms of sports media, I understand that a lot of these post-game press conferences are super mundane and nothing ever exciting happens in them. 95% of the time, it's nonsense. However, if the message only in the future comes directly from the players and the team, and you're a fan, and you want to know why such and such is happening, and why you don't have any answers as to why that is happening, you're not going to get it from the team. You're going to get it from reporters. You're going to get it from people who are there, who know people, who talk to people, and who get the story. Because whether you like it or not, the game is fun, but so is the drama around the game. That's part of what people are interested in when it comes to sports. It's the human stuff, the imperfect things that athletes do is interesting to all of us.
And I've always appreciated when, I certainly have imperfections, when I would say something incorrect on the air, when a coach or an athlete would come to me and talk about it. And Dick Vermeil and I had multiple conversations because I was on the air when he was driving home, and it happened. And the same thing happened with Tony La Russa, because Tony, same thing. I was on the air doing postgame when Tony was going home from the ballpark. Joe Torre would walk past me pretty much every day and say, I listened to your insincere BS last night. whether it was Vince Coleman or Tom Pagnozzi or Albert, if those guys had something, and I do try to make myself available to the players in case they hear something that I might have said or might not have said. But I appreciate when they come to me. And I don't think it's fair for the rest of the media if an athlete has a gripe with one media person to take it out on the entire media.
And here's another thing I don't want, that I don't like, is when an athlete defaults to, oh, that's just clickbait.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's Aaron Rodgers right now.
Every time somebody gets something on you and all you can say is that's clickbait, that means you have no defense, and that the report is probably true, but you can't say anything else except to try to discredit the person who wrote that piece or put that report out there. But the likelihood is there is something behind it, because reporters, by and large, are not trying to lose their damn jobs or their credibility. Nope. So they're not going to just make some crap up and run with it. I'm sorry, I know people think that's what happens.
Well,
that does not happen on a regular basis, because you're taught to not do that. If you go to any kind of journalism, you have any sort of training whatsoever, you know not to do that.
Right.
And you also have an ethical standard that you try to go by. So stop with that stuff.
And
reporters are not just making things up just to get a story. They're trying to get it right.
I felt like when I had when I covered the team on a regular basis, it was a lot different because in baseball or in hockey, the players didn't have a lounge to retreat to that
right.
they do now. Their domain was the locker room. And if I was the only guy in the locker room, I was able to develop relationships with those guys. And I felt like I was better able to tell their story
mm-hmm.
because I did have a relationship with them. If I go down now, the Cardinal locker room opens in about 15 minutes. I'm not going to be there, obviously. But even if I were there, the locker room is open for a half hour and you rarely see players in there.
Right.
And I applaud people like Mark Saxon and Derek Gould who do such a great job of getting information from the players because I never see them. And they really have to grind to do their job. That is not an easy job. But not only was I able to tell the story of those players, I feel like, but now, I know like Jason Isringhausen is listening, I was able to develop enough respect, a respectful relationship with those guys that if they need anything from me now that they're out and they have a charitable thing happening, I'm there for them. They have an open invitation. And I think that in your post-career, having as many good relationships as you can is a benefit.
Well, I do understand, going back to what you said earlier about teams having more control over their own message with social media, with the Players Tribune, there's a lot of value in all that stuff. And certainly there are some really good pieces that sometimes come out in that Players Trib. Because you get a real personal story from some guys, which is great. But you also need the other thing, too. And just in a small instance like this, people, Cardinals fans, are the thing they're upset about the most right now is Carpenter getting all these at-bats and all this playing time. And if you're an average fan, or if you're somebody who really cares, you want to know why he's continually getting at-bats. Do you think the team's going to tweet it out? You know, do you think that Carpenter himself is going to explain it, or Schilt is going to go to Twitter and explain
right.
it? This is what I'm doing here. The only way you get any kind of answers on that is by Mark Saxon being in the clubhouse or by Derek Gould being down there. That's it.
Yep. And if you are driving around and you say, blank the media, we don't need the media, what Ron's just described is why you do. You're 100% correct.
And
there.
This is on a sports level,
yeah.
so I understand.
Right.
It's not.
Journalism dies in the dark.
You damn right it does, man. Hey, and I know people listening that think journalism is stupid. It isn't, and you better get on board with it because if you don't, it's going to be too late someday.
Yep. It's the Fast Lane on 101 ESPN, and coming up, Mizzou's football team just missed the cut in this year's AP Top 25. We're going to talk about their chances of sneaking into the Top 25 later and an opponent injury that could help Mizzou and much more with Dave Matter of STLtoday.com and the Post-Dispatch. Dave is next on 101 ESPN. Missouri's football team is just 9 days away from opening their 2019 campaign. They're going to do so at Wyoming. And today is actually, or was actually, the last day of training camp for Mizzou. They practiced in Columbia this morning. And the beat writer for the Tigers, for St. Louis, the St. Louis Post-Dispatch and STLtoday.com, is Dave Matter, who's with us now on the Brown and Crouppen Celebrity Line on 101 ESPN. Dave, good to have you with us. How you doing?
Very good. Thanks for having me.
Well, let's start with this. I just want your overall impressions of how camp went.
You know, it's always hard to say. Anything that happens well on one side of the ball, you know, is not good for the other side. I think the good news is there weren't any real serious injuries that, you know, where a starter is going to miss the year or anything like that. I think they made progress kind of on both sides of the ball, figuring out who was going to play and play prominent roles. And the depth chart I don't think is going to change a whole lot from what it was going into camp, which is a sign of some stability there too. So I think overall pretty good. I think I kind of get the sense now they're just ready to play a game and you know, quit beating up on each other like they've been doing for the last 3 weeks.
So as you get through training camp here, the regular season going to start up here soon, one of the biggest storylines surrounding Missouri football is what's going to happen with the sanctions and in particular that bowl ban. The bowl ban. How did players and coaches, what was the atmosphere of the team like with that sort of hanging over them getting ready for the season?
You know, it's not even really talked about or brought up. You know, we talked to the players about it back during spring practices. and maybe a little bit when camp opened. But I think the way that Barry Odom has approached this, he was very open and honest with his players when the sanctions first came out in January. He explained the process to them on how this appeal was going to work. So the players all know what's going on. And more importantly, they just know it's beyond their control at this point. And really, it's beyond anybody's control with Missouri. It's just a waiting game now at this point to when the appeals committee is going to make its final ruling, whether it's in a week or a month or in the middle of the football season. Nobody really knows at this point. So Odom's message to his players has been there's no point in even thinking about this because nobody knows here when this is going to happen or what they're going to decide. So I think it's been a pretty it hasn't really been a topic. I'm sure it's lingering in the minds of players somewhat, but they get these guys so tuned in to the next day, the next drill, the next practice, the first game. They really, you know, do a good job of kind of building that tunnel vision that I don't think they're all that consumed with it. If they were, the seniors probably would have transferred because they had the opportunity to, and nobody did that this summer.
Dave Matter from the Post-Dispatch and STLtoday.com with us on 101 ESPN. And Dave, one of the disappointing things about training camp was the banged up status of the tight ends. We know that Brendan Scales is going to be out for a while with his injury, but is Albert O back in practice, and how's the rest of that position looking?
Yeah, Albert Okwuegbunam has been back in practice. Barry has said that if they were to play a game now that he would be available and ready to go. He was out there today and not limited at all what they were doing. Daniel Parker Jr., the top backup, had also been out for a couple of days with a shoulder, but he has since returned to the lineup. So I think they kind of dodged a bullet there. You know, when Albert O went down, it was right in front of me in the end zone. And it was a sprained knee, and obviously you fear the worst when something like that happens, but he checked out okay. Had a little soreness afterwards, but, you know, it's something to monitor. Obviously, he had a season-ending injury a year ago to his shoulder, so he's had an injury before. But as of right now, it looks like he'll be ready for that Wyoming game. And of those tight ends, Scales will be the only one that won't be available. And he's got a broken foot, head surgery, and is going to miss, they're saying, 6 to 8 weeks.
By the way, Dave, I was surprised when I was over there to hear about Jonathan Johnson being so close to the school's all-time receiving yards record. You've watched them every day. Are you surprised that he's there based upon what you've seen from him and what we saw from other guys over the years?
I think it's more just it's a little bit of a surprise because his role. He's never been a number one receiver. He's most of the year last year he was number three option because you had Emmanuel Hall and then you had Albert O. The one really good game he's had in his career was the bowl game last year, and that's when the only game last year when both Hall and Albert O were missing. So he was the number one target and had a great game. And he needs like 900 yards to break Denario Alexander's career record. He's never had 900 yards in a season, and I'm not sure. You know, I think there's enough balance on this receiving staff, and you throw in the backs and tight ends. I'm not sure he'll get there. But if anything, it just speaks to how he's been a pretty consistent guy. You know, he's been out there a lot for the last 3 years, and that's kind of how you creep up on records like that. You stay healthy, and you just always be out there and be available.
And he needs one of those 200-yard games, doesn't he, against SEMO? Or,
you know, yeah, that would help.
Yeah, that would make a huge difference.
Yeah, so I know Kelly Bryant's got himself quite a bit of fans in that locker room when he declared in front of everybody that he wasn't going anywhere, when people were given the option to leave because of those sanctions we talked about earlier. I would have to imagine he's gotten even more popular within that locker room since then, hasn't he?
Yeah, I think it's just his natural personality. You know, guys like being around him. He's a very easygoing guy. He has fun. He wants to get to know people. You know, I'll have a story about Kelly and just his background and his process of, you know, getting to know everybody in Columbia in the paper this weekend. But, you know, one story that stands out, his high school staff from South Carolina came and visited campus for a practice. I don't know if it was in the spring or the summer, but when they went into the dining hall and they introduced themselves to the person running the register, and they said, oh, wow, we love Kelly. You know, he's only been here a few months, but he has made sure that he got to know everybody's name in the dining hall, shakes their hand, does all the things that you expect and you want from a leader of a team. But you don't always get that from a guy who's just basically here for 9 months or so. And he's really made that kind of impression on the people all around the program. He's just a very positive guy. And, you know, that can only help you when you're on the field. They're going to face some tough moments and, you know, adversity and rough situations, whether on the road or at home. And when you got a guy out back there that you just like being around, I think it makes those tough times can go a lot easier for you.
Hey, Dave, one impression I got is that a lot of times an assistant coach will take over for a head coach, and it'll still kind of be the previous legendary head coach's program, somebody else just running it. This appears to me, and tell me if I'm right here, this is Barry Odom's program all the way. All the vestiges of the Gary Pinkel program appear to have been swept aside here.
You know, Barry was definitely heavily influenced by Gary Pinkel. I mean, he's the one who first gave him his first job in college coaching. He made him a safeties coach when he had never coached a position before, made him a defensive coordinator when he'd only done that at Memphis, not the Power Five level. So he has a lot of respect for Gary. I think he wanted to make this program his own, though. And, you know, there's still traces. I mean, he still has guys on his staff that worked for Gary for a long time. And, and Gary Pinkel wants nothing more than for Barry Odom to have great success at Missouri. So there's not like there's any friction there. But I think it's just natural when you are your own guy, you want to make it your own. And I think having a new facility kind of plays a natural role in that. The place isn't even going to look the same as it was under Gary. Although I just point out that South End Zone facility, that never happens if Gary doesn't push for it back his final years of coaching. That was something that he thought Missouri really needed when they start traveling around the SEC and seeing some of these palaces that these schools have. So, I think it's a good observation. You know, he's not going to deny, everything he learned. And,
He hit the button.
The phone monster got him.
Got him. Okay. Oh. We'll get him back because I want to ask one more thing.
Okay.
So we'll get Dave Matter back. I hope his battery didn't go. Is that what happens when your battery goes
off?
No,
I think it would go silent for a few seconds probably. And then you get the dial
tone.
You might
get a beep or something.
Maybe he did that on purpose.
I don't think so.
For effect?
That might be. The drama?
Don't you feel like this is really dramatic right now?
It's hugely dramatic.
I don't even...
We have him back?
I don't even know what to do.
Hey, Dave, I don't know if that was us or you, but it was funny. But we appreciate you coming back. Hey, I wanted to clarify. My point is that Barry appears to be very comfortable in his own skin and with his with this program being his. It wasn't any shots at or vestiges of anger at him about the Gary Pinkel program. It's just I'm impressed with his comfort level.
Yeah, I think there's a lot to that, and I think part of it is just getting the right staff underneath you. You know, he's had a lot of turnover on his staff. He's had to fire a couple coaches. He had Josh Heupel leave, which, is not to be unexpected, but he took his O-line coach with him, which didn't really sit well with Gary or with Barry, and he's had to make some staff additions. But he really likes where he is with the staff right now. He trusts the guys on offense because that's not his specialty. He's got a former head coach running things on the offensive side and Derek Dooley. He really likes and has always really liked Ryan Walters to run his defense. He's got Andy Hill running special teams, and Andy's coached longer than anybody. He really likes this team, or this staff, I should say. Having Garrick McGee, who's a former head coach at Division I level, is a big boost, too.
And you have a piece on Kelly Bryant coming out in the paper and at STLtoday.com. When does that come out?
It'll be in Sunday's paper. We'll kind of preview the whole season. We'll have our staff predictions for how the season's going to go for Missouri, and we'll look at all the different position groups and kind of see what we learned in camp and a closer look at the new quarterback.
Sounds great, Dave. Thank you very much, and we'll see you over there during the season.
Sounds good. Thanks, guys.
Take care. Dave Matter of the Post-Dispatch and STLtoday.com with us on 101 ESPN. Next up, the Cardinal lineup is out, and guess who isn't in it? That's next in your Hot Topics of the Day on 101 ESPN. Cards and Rockies open a four-game series tonight at the ballpark. Miles Michaelis against Herman for the Rockies. And the Cardinal lineup has Fowler in right, Wonger at second, Goldie at first, Ozuna, DeJong, Yachty, Edmund at third, Harrison Bader in center field, and Miles Michaelis is on the mound.
What?
So, no Matt Carpenter.
Randy, I need to hear that again.
Yeah, it's Fowler, Wonger, Goldie, Ozuna, DeJong, Molina, Edmund, Bader, and Michaelis.
I got to tell you, I feel very good about this right now because as the roster is currently constructed, That is about as good of a lineup as the Cardinals can put together. And you know what?
What?
They got to put together the best lineup every single night.
Yes, they do.
As I've been saying, because...
Because you have to do everything you can to win every game.
You damn right, Randy.
So, Ron...
You damn right.
So, if you're the Cubs, ninth inning, one-run lead, you got to know who's in the game, right?
Oh, no. Who is it?
Rowan Wick, of course.
Oh, no. Well, I think Kimbrel pitched 2 days in a row, and I know he pitched last night. They probably don't want to go to him three.
So Rowan Wick.
Yeah, good luck.
Good luck. There are two outs in the ninth, and the Cubs lead that game
1-0. Yeah, so it looks like, unless something changes here, it's going to be a one-game deficit for the Cardinals when they start play tonight. And, by the way, that Cubs-Giants game last night
was
pretty
epic.
Wild.
Yeah, it was great.
Yeah. I thought
Giants are playing a lot of great games lately. It's fun.
They really are.
They
and
hit
the
home
Mets,
runs and they allow them.
How about the freaking Mets last night with two runs in the 10th to win?
Amazing. They're on quite a roll. The Red Sox beat the Royals this afternoon 5-4. The Brewers are off. They are in Arizona to start a series tomorrow. And the other teams, well, the other team that would be playing in the NL Central that has a chance, the Reds are off today as well. The Pirates will host the Nationals, Stephen Brault against Max Scherzer, who makes his return to the Nationals rotation, and the Cubs win. Cubs win 1-0.
Oh, that was a pretty good Harry.
That wasn't that good.
No.
Young people don't remember Harry anymore, though. For them, Harry is Will Ferrell doing Harry.
Which is, and I love Will Ferrell, and all due respect to Scott Manziara.
Not a good.
It is a very bad Harry Carey impersonation.
It is.
And Ryan Dempster's Harry Carey is even worse because he's just impersonating Will Ferrell impersonating Harry.
I think
and
people have
so
forgotten because Harry died about 30 years ago now.
Well, I don't think it was that long. I think it was like 98 because I was in college when
it happened.
Oh,
maybe it was 20 years ago then. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, there you go.
It's been a while.
Yeah, 20. So.
Well.
There we go.
I do love Will Ferrell, but woof. That didn't really age well. But you know what's interesting about the Harry Carey thing? He was about the last local announcer that was a nationwide name.
Yeah.
How many baseball announcers currently with a team are like everybody in the country knows who they are? Vin Scully, and actually Vin Scully was the last.
Vin Jack was there after Harry.
Yeah, but Vin was the very last. He retired. He was the last one working. There isn't one now.
No, John Miller obviously is, well, he is because of his time on Sunday Night Baseball.
But you couldn't do an SNL sketch with him.
Now, that's a great point. That's a good way to put it. I don't even think you could have done that with Jack. I think Vin and Harry would probably be the only two.
Yeah, that's kind of a bummer.
Yeah.
And I don't. And the thing is, I don't know if there will ever be another one. And it's not that nobody can ever be that good. It's just it's different now.
Well, national broadcasters are national broadcasters, and local broadcasters are local broadcasters.
Yeah,
it's just the way it works. Football. Ed Werder of ESPN reports that in the most recent negotiations between Ezekiel Elliott and the Cowboys have offered Elliott a contract, making him one of the two highest-paid running backs in the league. Le'Veon Bell and Todd Gurley are 1-2, and apparently if Elliott accepted this offer, he would come in right between those two.
So
get to camp. Take
go.
The deal.
Yeah, man. That's better than I thought he would get.
Yeah.
So just go do it.
I like that idea. Hockey, Mark Pavlich, former NHL player, a member of the 1980 U.S. Olympic Miracle on Ice team, was arrested a week ago at his home in Minnesota and faces four felony charges, arrested at 8:48 p.m. of allegedly attacking his neighbor with a metal pole. The dispute began as a result of Pavlich accusing the victim of spiking his beer after they returned from fishing. Pavlich was charged with second and third degree assault, and was also charged with possession of a short-barreled shotgun and possessing a firearm with a missing or altered serial number.
So things are going well for Mark Pavlich.
Pav, everything's terrific.
Let's see. What do you spike a beer with? It's already got
antifreeze.
Oh,
how's
I know.
That sound?
Yeah, we talked about antifreeze yesterday. Went to high school with her.
Oh, yeah. So that would work. That'd be fun.
There's so many weird things happening with people. Yeah. You've got Dotel getting arrested for his cocaine ring.
Yeah.
Yori Laterra last year.
Patrick Chung today.
Patrick Chung, yeah.
Patrick Chung of the Patriots indicted and to be arraigned next Wednesday on a charge of cocaine possession. He faces, if he is convicted, and He'll probably plead this down. But he faces 5.5 to 7 years in prison if he is convicted.
So they're just going to let him go before they find anything out with what happens, right?
He didn't kill anybody like Aaron Hernandez. So, yeah, he's a patriot, and he'll be fine up there.
Do you think he's got a job for life?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
But he's just trying to be an entrepreneur. Oh, no, he's a possession guy.
I got no problem with that.
He's not like Dotel.
Hey, man, let the man live. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Live and let live.
That's right. And did you see the Astros have put out a statement about the Justin Verlander and Anthony Finish, mm-hmm. is that right?
Yes.
Being denied entry into the clubhouse. Here's what they say. Reporter Anthony Finish delayed temporarily from entering the Astros clubhouse following last night's game. This course of action was taken after taking into consideration the past history between Finesse and one of our players, Justin Verlander. Verlander's legitimate concerns about past interactions with Finesse and the best interest of the other media members working the game, we chose to prioritize these factors when making this decision. And they go on to say, we think that is the appropriate course of action. Do you know how many times in history there has been a contentious relationship between a reporter and a player?
Hundreds.
And they just do the job. Jay Mariotti used to still get press credentials when he was the biggest troll in sports media, and he would still get credentialed.
Yeah.
This is just Verlander being a baby,
yeah.
who, by the way, is not particularly popular with a lot of players all the time.
No. And it really shines a bad light on the Houston organization, too. To put three security guys in front of the
it's
door.
It's a bad look.
Yeah.
It's a bad look. Look, if he doesn't want to talk to the guy, go in the back and
hide
for
a while.
I never
liked Luno. I always thought Luno was just, he's one of those guys that, you know, he's lived off of. He came up under Mo, learned everything he learned from Mo, wasted a couple of number one picks, got lucky with another, and he's a product of a system.
Well, I don't believe that's his call in the moment, but
I'm going to blame him anyway.
He's the captain of the ship. Okay, so I'll give you that. So now he's got to go down with the ship?
I'm trolling here.
Yes, I know you are.
I'm trolling
buddy.
The Luno people.
I love you, man. I know what you're doing.
Hey, I know they should have fired Mo right after they won that World Series. That would have been the play. Fire Mo and promote the farm director. I think every team that wins the World Series should immediately fire their general manager. And,
you know what?
Because the farm director deserves all the credit.
Hey, you talk about parity. Every general manager who wins has to go to a new team the following
year.
Oh,
that'd be cool. That'd be great.
Yeah.
And the only person that would stay in the same place would be Andrew Friedman.
That's true. I'd love to have him.
I'm
not saying, look, I think it's more about what he's allowed to do than what happens.
But what they do, and we'll spend a minute on this, and we've talked about this before, but it can't be stressed enough. The Dodgers do a better job of pro scouting than anybody
yes.
else. And they've done it again this year, obviously getting Turner and getting Muncy and getting Kike Hernandez and their catcher in one
deal.
And
even Walker Buehler, he was a first-round draft guy.
But getting Bellinger later in the draft and Peterson later in the draft. It's amazing that they keep coming up with these players from nowhere.
That's it. It ain't just the money that they give to free agents or their current players they can hang on to. It's seeing and recognizing talent that nobody else
that
thinks much
other
of.
Other teams don't recognize. Even the genius Billy Bean didn't recognize Max Muncy. Waivers.
And then knowing how to get them right
yep.
and maximize them. That's what they're doing.
Yep. Coming up, we had a winner in the 4 o'clock fight yesterday, but he didn't answer his phone. So
what?
He didn't. He's the guy that said he was going to win, right? He said
you know what?
He knew all along he was going to win.
Do you know what this is? This
what?
Is like winning one race. Somebody challenges you to a race. You win that race. And they say, okay, give me a rematch. And he's like, nope, I'm good. And you can never race him again.
That's fine.
And he goes out a champion.
Good for him.
So that's what he's done. You've never beaten him.
His name was Miles, and I congratulate him. Bobby Plager is the only coach to ever go undefeated against Scotty Bowman because he wanted to coach his last game against Scotty Bowman and then beat him, and now he tells Scotty Bowman every time, hey, you never beat me.
So that's Miles is Bobby Plager.
He is. Coming up next, the 4 o'clock fight on 101 ESPN.